under our business sponsors. Just go to WTRJTheTruth.com.
Let's Face the Issues is a daily broadcast ministry of First Conservative Baptist Church with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Dr. Youngblood is also the founder, president of Conservative Theological University. Let's Face the Issues broadcast deals with real issues facing our culture today from a biblical perspective. God created three institutions, the home, government, and the church. Therefore, any issue that is harmful or has a negative impact on either of these institutions will be carefully dealt with and confronted from a biblical worldview. Too often, good people are afraid to confront serious issues that are attacking the church, the home, and Christians. We must stand against the enemies of the family and the church. Tune in each day for another broadcast of Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Here is Dr. Youngblood with Let's Face the Issues.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mike Hill. I'm sitting in today for Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. It is an honor and pleasure for me to do that. Those of you who are frequent listeners to this show know that I have previously hosted for Dr. Youngblood. I do it on occasion, probably, maybe once a quarter, once every other month, but it's always an honor and a pleasure to do so, to just discuss the issues that are happening today and how we as Christians should respond to those issues. Just a little bit about me. I live in the Pensacola, Florida area. I'm a small business owner. I own an insurance and financial service agency. I've been doing that for 33 years. Prior to that, I served active duty in the Air Force for 10 years after graduating from the Air Force Academy in 1980. I also served in the Florida State House, first elected in 2013 in a special election, subsequently elected to the House in 2014, 2018. So I was able to serve a number of terms there in the Florida House, and we got some good things done while I was there. Currently, of course, not in office. I am a recovering politician and working on making a living for me, my family, my employees as owner of an insurance and financial services agency. There are a number of topics I thought we would discuss today, and I'm always interested in your comments, in your input. If you would like to join the show, please call in at 904-831-0917. These are the topics that I'd like to discuss today. First of all, I had the honor of being asked to participate in an Article 5 Convention of States simulation, which was held in Williamsburg, Virginia, just a couple of weeks ago. Very interesting 2 days that we were all together, and I want to share that with you. Also, let's talk about the Trump indictments that are happening. There are now 4 Trump indictments, and but every time that an indictment comes, Trump's poll numbers increase. And also the timing is always very suspicious. Every time it looks like that the Biden administration, that Hunter Biden investigation is beginning to tighten down, that the noose is getting tighter, all of a sudden they announce an indictment against Trump. Then let's also talk about, there's a lot I like to get, if we can get hold of it, if we can have time to get through it all, of how universities and the left are trying to get around in the red states, which are prohibiting this diversity, equity, and inclusion nonsense, and how even in these red states, these universities and leftists are trying to get around these new laws, which says you will not practice diversity, equity, and inclusion in that state. And then how the court rules on men being allowed to participate in either sororities or women's sports. It's utterly amazing when it comes to our current court system. You never know what you're going to get. It's almost like a crapshoot or something. And that includes the Supreme Court. When something comes before the Supreme Court, the obvious answer, the obvious right answer, the obvious justice answer, you don't know if you're going to get it or not. Because you have these guys, they're up on, and women, they're up at the Supreme Court, who have these clerks working for them, and they come up with these ideas, these convoluted reasonings, these justifications for turning things around that everyone knows is not correct. I'll use a perfect example. When it wasn't that long ago, when our Supreme Court ruled that same-sex marriage was legal, and Justice Gorsuch joined the leftists in that ruling because he said that the 1964 Civil Rights Act, which says you will not discriminate based on race, sex, religion, national origin, and so forth, religion, all that, that when you said sex, we will not discriminate based on race or sex, when they said sex, that the courts, I mean, that the legislators meant sexual orientation also. Utter nonsense. Complete and utter nonsense. But that's what we get from the Supreme Court. So you never know what you're going to get from these guys at the judicial level. But whether it's a single judge, whether it's a court of appeals, or whether it goes to the Supreme Court, you never know, which is a shame because everybody knows what the right answer is, but they do not do what they know what is the right answer. They do it based on their own ideological bent. Okay, oh, here's something I'd like to talk about that scientists have recently found out, get this, that plastic straws are more toxic than, I'm sorry, paper straws are more toxic than plastic straws. You say, well, how can that be? Well, we'll talk about that. And then I'm sure you've heard about Dr. Jordan Peterson, who had that court ruling up in Canada, stating that the psychology profession can order him to undergo training. It's so ironic. He has to undergo psychological training because of his own personal views. The group of psychologists says he has to undergo psychological retraining, education. And we'll talk about why that is so important for us, even for us here in America, though it happened in Canada. And then I came across a recent article by Dr. Robert Malone, excellent article, which talks about the United States being in a state of exception and what is causing that, of how that there can be some sort of emergency that the state declares, and because of that, there is an exception to the normal rule of law that only the state can abrogate, only the state can go against. So we'll talk about that article also, and then we'll talk about Governor Ron DeSantis polling that he has been experienced here lately, and what that could possibly mean for his presidential run. But before we get into any of that, I want to talk about this heinous shooting which recently took place in Jacksonville at a Dollar General, I believe it was. I mean, just a tragedy, a tragedy that here is this demoniac who went into Dollar General and killed three people and then took his own life. And because he had written a couple of manifestos and because he was carrying a swastika when he went in, of course, he was labeled a racist. And if you believe what he had written, then he is a racist. And we find that the media will make sure that that is known every time that this story is told. That this was a racist who did this. This was a white supremacist who did this. They will make sure that that is told each time that this story is broadcast. And, you know, if you go by what he wrote in his manifesto, he more than likely is a racist or was a racist. He's no longer here. And it's a shame. It's a total shame. But what we see is that when there are other crimes that are committed, when it's not white on black, if it is some other group against whites or whatever, it is never because of a racist tendency. Now, you take that one demoniac, that deranged guy who wanted to, who rolled over all those people with his vehicle at that Christmas parade, and no one there said that this was a racist attack. They just said, oh no, he's out of his mind, this was a black guy who ran over a bunch of white people, and I guarantee you that if a white person had done that, he would have been called a racist, a white supremacist. Hey, we have a caller on the line, a call from Kenneth. Kenneth, thanks for calling in. What is your comment or question, please?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Hello?
Yes, can you hear me?
A little bit, yes.
Hey.
Kenneth, go ahead with your comment or question, please.
Hello? Hello?
Hello, Kenneth. Go ahead with your comment or question.
You got to call back.
Okay. We have a bad connection there. Can't hear Kenneth. So, Kenneth, if you're there, please try calling in again. We had a bad connection. And anyone else wanting to join the show, please call in. The number is 904-831-0917. So just as we tried to pick up that call from Kenneth, we were talking about the terrible shooting which took place in Jacksonville, where a white person went into a black neighborhood in the Dollar General and killed three people and then took his own life. And it was a terrible thing. It's a tragedy. And I heard just this morning as Governor DeSantis went to a service to mourn those who were killed, that as they introduced him, he was booed by some in the crowd who were there that was predominantly black, and they booed him. Why would you boo somebody who is coming to express his outrage against what happened, who wanted to give his condolences and prayers to the families and friends that were affected? Why would you do that unless you wanted to turn this whole situation to a political event, which is what you absolutely did? And your behavior is just as heinous as anyone else's who would take a tragedy and try to turn it into a political event. You know, Governor DeSantis has done a fantastic job at the state level with the state of Florida. Right now, Florida is experiencing an economic boom. Unemployment is very low. We've gotten rid of a lot of this leftist ideology, which was trying to creep its way into the state, including this critical race theory nonsense they want to teach in school, getting rid of diversity, equity, and inclusion at as many levels as we can, including at the workplace level. He has done a great job here in Florida. He has restricted abortion down to the six-week level, even though I would like to see it abolished completely from inception, from the point of inception on. That is a human being. It is a baby, and it needs to be protected in the womb. And Governor DeSantis has taken a step trying to do that with that six-week abortion ban. I understand that Kenneth is back on the phone. Kenneth, let's hope we have a better connection this time.
Yes, can you hear me?
What is your question or comment, please?
Hello?
Yes, Kenneth, go ahead.
You can't hear me.
Yes, I can hear you, Kenneth. Go ahead, please.
I'm a black man going on 70, and I thought that was so disgraceful for them to boo our governor. Our governor has been great, and he really has. Back him up. And it's just, I hate to say this like this, but any black person that go with Democrats, and you see what the Democrats are doing, you done lost your ever-loving mind.
Kenneth, I agree with you.
Hello?
I think while we were disconnected,
hello?
I made that same comment that you did. That, Kenneth, I made the same comment that you did, and that it was disgraceful for some of those in that audience to boo Governor DeSantis when he came to give his condolences, when he came to speak against the outrageous action that took place. He went so far as to call the deranged demoniac shooter a scumbag. Of course, he was completely against what happened. And to be booed, as I say, turned that whole thing into a political process when it was not at all. So just touching a little bit more on that, and then we'll move on, because, I mean, it is a tragedy. It's terrible what happened. And just recently, as I was going through my Bible studies, I came across this verse in Psalm 119, 126, and it says this: "It is time for thee, Lord, to work, for they have made void thy law." It is time for the Lord to act, for his law has been broken. And we are seeing that not just in the United States, but around the world. Lord, we are calling upon you, the body of Christ, the church, we're calling upon you to act, because his law has been broken. It's been broken and trampled upon and cast aside, because here is mankind, not only in the United States, which was founded as a Christian nation. There is no doubt about that. And if anybody wants to challenge me on that, I'll be glad to debate you. The United States of America was founded as a Christian nation, and God shed his grace on his great nation. It prospered, it flourished, and now, due to its prosperity, it has turned its back on God. There are too many people in this nation who are godless, who have no regard for God, for his son Jesus, or for his word. And we are seeing it, the results of that, all around us. And so we call upon the Lord, as this psalmist did, that it is time for the Lord to act, O God, for your law has been broken. If anyone wants to comment on that or join the discussion, it's 904-831-0917. Okay, let's start off with, or let's get back to, this Article 5 simulated convention of states that I attended not too long ago in Colonial Williamsburg, Virginia. Okay, what is the whole idea? We have in our Constitution right now Article 5. Article 5 says that a Constitution, a convention of states, can be called to amend our Constitution. So far in the past, our Constitution has been amended by Congress. And how that is done is that an amendment has to be agreed to by a supermajority. Two-thirds in the House and two-thirds in the Senate have to vote on wanting to amend our Constitution. And they will put forward this amendment. And it has happened several times. There are 27 amendments to our Constitution currently. I believe 27, it might be 28. I think there's 27 amendments to our Constitution. And once that's been done, then three-fourths of the states have to ratify what Congress wants to put as an amendment to our Constitution. And once that ratification is done, then it becomes a part of our Constitution. That's just how the process works. But there is another part of that Article 5, which says that if two-thirds of the states call for a convention of states for the purpose of amending our Constitution, then that is another mechanism whereby our Constitution can be amended. So far, that has not been done. And once that convention of states is held and they come forward with a proposal to amend our Constitution, it also has to be ratified by three-fourths of the states. So it is a tough hurdle to get through to do this. Now, there are people on both sides which want this convention of states, and there are those on the other sides who are vehemently opposed to a convention of states to amend our Constitution. Now, I am one who would support a convention of states to amend our Constitution if it were done properly. It has to be done properly. And what we did in Colonial Williamsburg just recently, it was August 2nd through the 4th, is a simulation to show how a convention of states could be held if it were held. We had all 50 states represented with commissioners, except for Rhode Island. Rhode Island did not send a delegate to this simulation, which is, you know, a bit ironic when you think about it, because Rhode Island did not send anyone to the original Constitutional Convention, which brought us our Constitution in the first place. Rhode Island was not there, even though it was passed and then ratified by three-fourths of the states, so that we do have our Constitution, which is the longest surviving constitution in the world, except for one. There is one constitution which is a year longer than the U.S. Constitution, and that is the Constitution of the state of Massachusetts. Even though when you look at what's coming out of Massachusetts nowadays, they're not even following their own constitution. They've become so radical left that it's almost impossible to recognize them as part of this great nation. There's Massachusetts and crazy California. There's crazy New York. And they're being joined by Oregon and other states, northwestern states, which have just gone insane. And by the way, a lot of what you see happening in Oregon and Washington state is because people left the crazy state of California and took their goofy laws or ideas with them, their ideology, and made them laws in those states. We held this simulated convention August 2nd through the 4th. It was, and I was a participant, most states sent three delegates to this convention. Some had two, and as I said, Rhode Island didn't have any, but most sent at least three delegates to this convention. Florida had three. It was myself and two other former state legislators. One was a former congressman, but the three of us made up the Florida delegation. Each state had only one vote. So each proposal that was brought before us in this simulated convention, we had to kind of huddle together and say, yes, I'm up, or no, I'm down on this one, and come to a consensus and decide how we were going to vote. There were some that we voted no on, particularly if they were amendments that were brought for a proposal, but there were a majority we said yes on, as the most of the other members did also. Now, before we attended this simulation in Williamsburg, Virginia, I called those who were organizing this, and it was put together by the Convention of States Foundation. And I called the organizers and asked them, I said, how many people do we have that are from the right and from the left attending this simulation? And their response was very telling. They said, we could not get any interest from the Democrats to attend this convention from hardly any state. They just were not interested. I said, oh, interesting. So the majority of people who attended this, the vast majority, were Republicans and conservatives. I did meet some Democrats while we were there, but they were not far left leaning. They were in the middle, leaning towards the right. And we appreciated their input that they brought also. So how it was set up is we were broken up into three different committees. And that those committees consisted of a federal legislative and executive jurisdiction committee, a federal term limits and judicial jurisdiction committee, and a fiscal restraints committee. I was actually on a fiscal restraints committee, and it was set up so that on the first day, which was the first full day, which was actually the third, we would break up into our committees and come up with proposals that we would present to the entire body on the next day, the fourth, that we would then vote on if we wanted to be a constitutional amendment. So that first day, we were broken up into our various committees, and I was, again, on the fiscal constraints committee. So I submitted a proposal that said abolish the 16th Amendment. The 16th Amendment gives Congress the authorization to tax our personal income. I said just abolish it completely. I said that is a simple amendment that everyone understands. Everyone would agree to something like that, at least a vast majority would, unless you're a leftist who wants to control people, then they would be against it, of course, who would want to control this nation. But we said my proposal was to get rid of it. Then during debate, there were those who wanted to add amendments to it, like, okay, if we remove the 16th Amendment, we have to replace it with something like a flat tax, a consumption tax, a fair tax. And we started getting bogged down in the weeds with discussion and so forth. And so what I then said after much discussion, we pulled that and we came up with a different proposal. When we come back after the break, I'm going to briefly go through, because I want to close out this discussion, I want to briefly go through what the three different committees came up with for their particular proposal that they brought then to the floor. So when I said to amend the Constitution to remove Amendment 16, which gives Congress the authorization to tax our personal income, because we got into such discussion about what to replace it with and when it would go into effect and so forth, I pulled that proposal. So that came off of the committee floor and was not to be presented to the entire delegation on the next day. And each of the other two committees were going through the same process that we were going through in a fiscal constraints committee. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Mike Hill sitting in for Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Let's continue this conversation after this break. It's been my honor to be with you this morning.
This is Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood from First Conservative Baptist Church and Conservative Theological University in Jacksonville, Florida. To learn more, visit conservative.edu.
WTRJ, Orange Park, Jacksonville. WAYL, St. Augustine. WATY, Folkston, Georgia. Online at ilovethetruth.com.
With SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason. Tropical storm Idalia is intensifying, expected to become a major hurricane before it reaches Florida's Gulf Coast on Wednesday. The storm expected to blow ashore somewhere in the Big Bend region. At last check, it was about 90 miles off the western tip of Cuba, packing maximum sustained winds of 65 miles per hour. In Jacksonville, Florida, they're mourning the loss of several people. They were shot and killed by a gunman who later took his own life at a Dollar General store. Police say it was clearly a racially motivated attack. Howls of protest from Los Angeles city officials, perhaps most notably Mayor Karen Bass, after Texas Governor Greg Abbott sent 39 illegal migrants to the sanctuary city over the weekend. And checking Wall Street, the Dow is up 267 points, NASDAQ ahead 116. This is SRN News.
Conservative Theological University has been training God's servants since 1982. Call 1-800-GO-BIBLE for your interview today. Please leave your contact info for the admission staff to reach out to you. Courses can be taken on campus, online, or distant personalized education. Partial scholarships are available. Call 1-800-GO-BIBLE and leave your contact info today for Conservative Theological University.
Thanks for tuning in to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Since 2015, Dr. Youngblood has taken scores of questions and comments on the challenging issues of the day with a goal of motivating and informing listeners to examine the issues from a central biblicist worldview. Currently, this broadcast is heard on three regional stations in Florida and Georgia. Dr. Youngblood's expository preaching is heard on two stations in Ohio and Virginia, as well as Brunswick, Georgia, St. Augustine, and Jacksonville, Florida. There's now a great opportunity to expand this vital ministry to other cities, and we sincerely need your help to accomplish this mission. Your support in any amount is needed to take this next step in sharing God's truth in a relevant, lively, and timely way. Thanks for your willingness to support this broadcast as we prepare to face the issues on a broader scale. Please go to fcbcatjax.com and click the donation button, or send your best gift to First Conservative Baptist Church, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32258. Attention Radio.
Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mike Hill sitting in for Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Just before we had the break at the top of the hour, we were talking about an Article 5 simulated convention of states, which took place in Colonial Williamsburg, Virginia, August 2nd through 4th, which I was a part of. I had the honor to be one of three Florida delegates to attend this Article 5 simulation. There were a total of 132 delegates. We were called commissioners from 49 different states. Rhode Island did not send a delegate, just like they did not to our original convention of states. Now, I'll tell you, before the break, I was talking about what we discussed in a fiscal constraints committee. We were broken up into three committees, which were to bring before the floor on the final day, the 4th, to spend a full day of debating and then voting on those particular proposals. Here is the proposal which came out of the Fiscal Constraints Committee. Even though we had discussed several, just due to time constraints, we only had one day, we came up with this one proposal, and this was it. It states, this would be a proposed constitutional amendment to our current Constitution. Congress shall adopt a preliminary fiscal year budget no later than the first Monday in May for the following fiscal year and submit said budget to the President for consideration. Federal expenditures for each fiscal year shall not exceed average annual revenue collected in the prior three fiscal years. The idea behind that, ladies and gentlemen, was to come up with some restraints on this crazy government spending that we are seeing right now, which they are predicting is going to approach not too far in the future, $35 trillion, which is crazy. That is insane money. And that is why we are experiencing inflation right now. Inflation is having too many dollars chasing too few goods. And those too many dollars are coming from our government, which is printing money like crazy. They are spending like crazy. And then in this vain attempt to rein it in, we have the Federal Reserve increasing interest rates on mortgages, on any sorts of loans. It is crazy what they are doing to our economy. They created the mess in the first place, and now they think they can fix it. Such arrogance. But at any rate, that came out of the Fiscal Constraints Committee. By the way, that was debated and approved as an amendment to, in this simulation, as an amendment to our Constitution. Here is another. Term limits out of their committee was this one. No person shall be elected to serve in the House of Representatives more than 9 full terms, nor elected or appointed to serve in the Senate more than 3 full terms. So we're talking a total of 18 years. This article shall not disqualify any person from completing a term in Congress to which that person was elected or appointed prior to ratification of this article. No person shall serve in Congress for more than 24 years in total. And I'll tell you what, ladies and gentlemen, that one was debated, and I think it had a unanimous approval when it passed. And the Florida delegation, myself included, we certainly did vote for it also. And recall, as I stated perhaps before the top of the hour, that each state only had one vote. And so for term limits, that passed. It was unanimous. And then here's another one that came from a third committee, which I thought was interesting, which also passed unanimously. And it says that the legislatures of the state shall have authority to abrogate any action of Congress, President, or administrative agencies of the United States, whether in the form of a statute, decree, order, regulation, rule, opinion, decision, or other form. This provision shall not apply to presidential action taken pursuant to Article 2, Section 2, Clause 1, and to presidential appointments. So in other words, this gives the states the authority, this constitutional amendment will give states to the authority to say, we will not comply with some arbitrary ruling or decree that may come from some three-letter agency, the EPA or the FDA or the CDC, or from even if it were to come from Congress itself. That we said as a state, the state of Florida, the state of Missouri, the state of Kansas, whichever you want, if that state's legislature says we will not comply with that, you are not going to force that on us, that then starts shifting the powers back to the states where it belongs, according to our 10th Amendment, back to the states where it belongs and away from Congress, away from this huge ballooning federal government, which is a complete aberration of what our founding fathers intended and what the anti-federalist argued against when they did not want a constitution passed in the first place because they were so concerned that it was going to give too much power to the federal government. Okay, let's switch to another subject. Let's look at the polling that we are seeing right now for Governor DeSantis. And as Kenneth, one of the callers who called in earlier, oh, by the way, if you would like to call in and give us your comments or your thoughts or have a question, the call-in number is 904-831-0917. 904-831-0917. Kenneth called in earlier, and I agree with him completely. The fact that when Governor DeSantis went to Jacksonville to speak about the heinous crime that took place at the Dollar General, where this demoniac killed three people and then took his own life, when he went to speak there, there were those in the audience. He was going to give his condolences. He was going to condemn that actual shooting. That there were some in the audience who booed Governor DeSantis. They turned the whole event into a political event because they were not thinking about the families that were grieving, was not thinking about the terrible event that happened. They wanted to make it a political event, showing their displeasure of Governor DeSantis and how he has run the state of Florida, which, by the way, I believe he has done a fantastic job. He's done a great job here as Florida, and he decided to run for governor. I'm sorry, decided to run for president. Good grief. So he decided to run for president. Now, I've said this before, even before he ran for president, I did not think he should run for president, that he should have done that. I thought he was doing a great job for Florida. We elected him as governor, wanting him to finish his term as governor. He was just elected last year to his second term, wanted him to finish that term, finish doing the good job that he's doing for Florida, and then consider running for president in 28. I thought that the person that would do the best job for getting this nation back on track would be President Trump, which he displayed completely during his first term. He made some mistakes, he made some mishaps, but overall he had this nation moving in the right direction. And even though he was hamstrung by those on the left and by rhinos and by the deep state, he was still able to get a lot of things done. I believe that when he gets elected again, that he will be able to do a lot more because now he knows Washington, D.C. a lot better and where those the traps are set for him. Well, based on all that, I'm not the only one who believes that. President Trump has been polling very high for a long time now, at least in the 50% approval rating, sometimes getting up into the 60% approval rating of that's who registered voters want for their president. That's who they want to represent them in a primary and going on to the general election. When Governor DeSantis first decided he wanted to run, he was actually within striking range, according to the polls. And by the way, I don't always believe in polls. I think oftentimes they're nonsense, especially when they're taken by its own campaign. But here was DeSantis at the time was polling within reach of President Trump. He was only down by 6 points, according to some polls. But since then, there's been a steady decline where latest poll I saw was done by, I think it was Quinnipiac poll. Yes, it had Trump at 57% and DeSantis was down to, I think it was 9%. Yes, 9%. And then there was Vivek Ramaswamy, who is in third now, followed by Pence, and then there's Nikki Haley and Tim Scott. By the way, I'll just be blunt and say this. The most of those who are running for president right now are not, on the Republican side, are not qualified, in my mind, to be president of the United States. Some are, but very few. President Trump, of course, but the others, a lot of the others, should not even be running for president, in my mind. You're not ready for that job. You may have done a great job of where you currently are or where you were before, either governor, U.S. senator, vice president, whatever, but you're not ready for the big leagues. Now, Mike Pence, he's ready. I mean, he would not be my nominee if I had to vote. But Mike Pence, he's been in Congress. He's been a governor. He's been vice president. He knows what that stage is all about. Because when you are president of the United States, that is an international job. You have to be able to move and make decisions on the international scene, and to do that in a way of what is best for America. And that's why Trump was so well liked, because he did move on an international scene and he made it plain that I am going to put America first. He said that even at the United Nations. He said it when he would tour the European Union. He said, I am going to do what is making, what is best for America, what will make America first. And he went on to say, and you should do the same thing for your nation. And that's exactly what he did. The rest of that crowd, well, Mike Pence, for example, he does not always believe in America first. He's more of a globalist, and the rest just aren't ready. Vivek Ramaswamy, bright guy. He's young, 38. I've actually met him at a Council for National Policy event where he came and spoke and did a book signing. Smart guy, but he's not presidential material. You're not ready for that prime time yet. You're just not there. You need a little more experience, a little more maturation in that whole process. He just isn't there right now. And besides that, he's not eligible. He is not a natural-born citizen. A natural-born citizen says that your parents, both parents, were born in the United States, are citizens, and you are a United States citizen. He doesn't meet that qualification. And by the way, neither does Kamala Harris, neither did Bobby Jindal, neither did Ted Cruz, and neither did Barack Obama. But for some reason, it didn't seem to stop them. They ran anyway, and Obama even got elected, that fraud. And speaking of frauds, Biden is a complete fraud. He did not win that election. That election was clearly stolen. There were enough irregularities that went on that it was plain to see to everyone that here we are in five swing states, that in those five states, simultaneously, the same time, voting would stop, Biden was trailing, and then pick up later, simultaneously, all of them at the same time, start counting again, and all of a sudden Biden's ahead. Like, please. Everyone could see that there were many irregularities. Then the judicial system, the court system, would not even take up the cases, saying that you have no standing, that we see nothing wrong here, even though it was obvious to Helen Keller, anyone who's deaf, dumb, and blind could have perceived that that election was stolen. And we have this illegitimate president in office right now who doesn't know what he's doing. He is suffering from dementia, should be placed, receive proper care, and placed in a home. It's elder abuse what they are doing to that man right now. And we see it every day. Every time he speaks, it's embarrassing. But here's DeSantis, who is who started out strong, but is now slowly going down in the polls. And if it were up to me, I would say, hey, stop spending other people's money and go back to being a strong governor of Florida and just drop out of that race. Why won't he do that, or any of the others who see that they are so far behind that they're not even, you know, close to being in the race? Why won't they just drop out? Well, my theory is that they're thinking anything could happen. Anything could happen to President Trump. Heaven forbid, he could get hit by a bus. And if that happens, all of a sudden, hey, we're in a game. Or if they are dumb enough to believe that these political indictments, which are happening to President Trump right now, are going to mean anything in terms of keeping him from being president, and they're hoping that perhaps something will stick and will knock President Trump out of the race, that is not going to happen. Every indictment that comes down, Trump's popularity increases. Americans can see that this is a political witch hunt that is going against President Trump. Americans can see that this is an attack on Trump so that he cannot run for president. They're trying to prevent him from running for president altogether, much less receive the nomination and then get elected. They don't want him to even run, and it's all political. It's a shame of what we are seeing that's taking place. President Trump himself has called it election interference, which I do agree with. It is election interference and should be taken care of. So here we have this weaponization collusion of Jack Smith. He brought just this, this attorney general brought this indictment, actually the special counsel, Jack Smith, brought this indictment against President Trump, but it has come out just recently that just weeks before this clown, special counsel Jack Smith, brought charges against Donald Trump for allegedly mishandling classified documents, that one of his top aides met with the White House counsel's office. That raises serious concerns about coordinated legal efforts against Biden's top political opponent going into the 2024 election. Of course it is. It is obvious what they are doing, that this special counsel, Jack Smith, who is a leftist political hack, who has people on his team meeting at the White House with the Biden administration about mishandling classified documents, which, by the way, did not take place. Trump did not mishandle classified documents. If anyone who did, it was Joe Biden, who to this day, no charges have been brought against him for mishandling classified documents for years, since he was a senator and as a vice president in unsecured places. Trump, who as president had the authority to declassify the documents in the first place, and he had them secured at Mar-a-Lago by the direction of the National Archives, which, by the way, the National Archives have ultimate authority over the handling of not ultimate authority, actually the president does, but they have the responsibility of keeping up with classified documents, which they clearly did not do. But have any charges been brought against Biden for doing that? Any charges brought against Obama for doing it? Any charges brought against Mike Pence for doing it? No, it's all complete and utter nonsense. And the fact that he would collude with the Biden administration simply shows that indeed this is a political witch hunt that is going on. Okay, Now, and the other indictments that we see going on, here we find, get this, ladies and gentlemen, just recently I was on a Jamaican national radio. They called me and asked me if I would comment on the most recent indictment, which came down from that fraud, Fannie Willis, out of Fulton County, Georgia, which said because President Trump called some state officials in Georgia and said, hey, no, find the right votes. Find these votes for me. We know that there are a lot of votes that are being counted, which are fraudulent. Find the right ones for me, and let's make this right. Because he did that, they're bringing charges against him, RICO charges, racketeering charges against him and 18 others. Utter nonsense. Of course, this is election interference. They are trying to stop Trump from even being nominated. They're trying to kick him out of the race. And the fact that they're trying to set trial dates before major primaries take place in various states makes it even just that more blatant. But I said this when I was on national radio. I said, you have to look at who they are using to bring these indictments. Out of New York, who was it? Alvin Bragg, a fraud. We have this fraud out of Georgia, a Fannie Willis bringing these charges. Note that both of them just happened to be black and happened to have been supported by Soros in their campaigns to get elected. And it was always with the intent that they were going to go after Trump with the very first opportunity that they have. And so they use these two black attorney generals to bring these charges against Trump. Why? Because they are part of the protected class, according to the left. Who's going to go against them? You can't, because then you would be called a racist. And so they bring these phony charges against Trump. When I said that on national public radio in Jamaica, the host went crazy. He said, Mr. Hill, I cannot believe that you just said that. I said, well, it's the truth. And I am saying it because they are using these dupes, these pawns, to bring these indictments against Trump, which are clearly politically motivated. And what we are going to see instead, I believe, is that President Trump is going to prevail over these indictments. He is going to win the nomination, Republican nomination, and he is going to win the general election and be the next president of the United States. I firmly believe that, but I have to always put a caveat in there. If we can stop the Democrats from cheating. And that is a huge if, because they have shown, they have proven that cheating, they can get away with it. And they can do it at a very sophisticated level, even if they are caught. Their response is, so what are you going to do about it? They cheated in Arizona so blatant against Carrie Lake. And so what are you going to do about it? And they will try to cheat in this next election, presidential election, they will try to cheat. And again, the response is going to be, so what are you going to do about it? And they will cheat in ways that we hadn't seen before. So how are we to respond as Christians? As it says in Psalms 119, 126, it is time for the Lord to act. For, O Lord, your law has been broken. Lord, we call upon you as Christians to save this great nation so that we can fulfill its destiny of preaching the gospel to a lost and dying world. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Mike Hill sitting in for Dr. Gene A. Youngblood on Let's Face the Issues. Have a blessed day.
Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University. 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida. Located 1 mile south of I-295. FCBC invites you to tune in nightly, 9 to 10, for expository preaching on 91.3, 91.7, and 91.9 FM. You're invited to worship with them. A reminder, CTU is now enrolling students for next semester. Ask about first semester scholarships.